This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Want to know another Snapple fact? The first hot air balloon passengers were a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. Ridiculous. Check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavored Snapple near you.
Hello, I'm Simon Le Bon, and you are listening to The Pantheon Network.
Hey, I'm Nick DiMatteo, and welcome to Season 6, Episode 20 of Music Is Not a Genre. Here we go, MXG, yeah, okay. Listen, I batch cooked these son of a bitches, and I just did part one and this is the exciting conclusion. We'll get there in a second, but that's just all to say that there's not enough coffee in the world or water to get me through a day like this, but I have so much fun. I have so much fun, and I hope you're having fun listening to it, too. And watching, and thank you for both of those. If you are just listening, go to youtube.com/music at Music Is Not a Genre, and you can see all the videos for these episodes, except for the bonus M extra vids, which are on patreon.com/musicisnotagenre. Let's get right to it then. This episode is part two from last week. It's What's an Album and Why? Part 4.2, Pop versus Indie in the 1980s. So last week, I had indie versus pop in the 1980s, and I went up to 1985. And now this is pop versus indie. There's no real significance there except to say that it's hard to know which one was more dominant. The reason why I put pop first in the second half is because, as always, what happens with the industry, they figured out how to capitalize on what the underground was doing. And so their releases, their music dominated the second half of the decade, with pop music built on sounds and styles that had been established by indie artists in the early 80s and late 70s. So, to me, indie won for art because of the influence, and of course, pop won for commerce, but that's sort of a definition there, but we'll get to that in the conclusions. For now, let's pick up where we left off from last week. And last week, again, I gave you kind of the overview and got you up to 1985, which means we're going to start with 1986. Seems logical, right? And we'll go to the end of the decade, and of course some conclusions for the second half as well as for the full decade, and a setting up of what would come after that, because of course we're continuing this series until albums die or whatever, to the present day. And then of course a featured song and questions and the bonus M Extra video, which this week is on CDs. Now listen, I get excited about all of this stuff, the free stuff, the bonus stuff, whatever. But there are times where I get even more excited. So in this case, right, I did an episode on cassettes as a bonus episode last week. This week, the episode is on CDs. I am equally excited for both of those for various reasons. The history, both histories go back way further than you might think. The details that I have in those are pretty damn interesting. So patreon.com/musicisnotagenre for those bonus episodes. Let's get to the year by year, starting up in 1986. If 85 was the most 80s of the 80s, 86, let's say this, if 84 was when the 80s had arrived, even though, like I said, the 80s started as the 80s pretty much, but it really arrived in 84. And 85 was the most 80s of the 80s. 86 was the aftermath. It was kind of a tweener year. There's a lot of filler on the charts, almost like because the previous 3 years were so huge that the world needed a breather and needed to go in a different direction. There's some big ones on the charts as well, but not nearly as big as the ones that came before, like freaking Thriller and Purple Rain and Born in the USA, and not as big as the ones that would come after, which would prepare for that next kind of shift, that pivot point. But you also see whispers in 86 of things that would pop bigger in the next decade, as you did a bit in 1985, especially with some debut albums and notable albums. We'd see even more of it in 86. Hair metal was still rising in 86. country music was starting to show why it would become a dominant force in the 1990s. It was certainly present in the 80s and 70s, my favorite decade for country, but it wouldn't be as dominant as it would be in the 90s and beyond. Quick note, again, in 86, CDs were still not making a big impact, either in sales or artistically, but it's notable that CDs were being sold by then. If you listen to my bonus episode or watch it on patreon.com/musicisnotagenre, you'll find out when the first CD was released and where CDs were by 1986. Some top albums of the year in 86, Miami Vice soundtrack again, Top Gun soundtrack again. In the 60s, there were a lot of albums, musical albums, that reigned at the top of the charts. In the 70s, you had a few of those. Maybe you had a soundtrack or two, I don't remember, but not much of that, frankly. In the 80s, I haven't seen a single musical theater album top the charts, but quite a few soundtrack, including TV like Miami Vice, but mostly for movies. So Miami Vice and Top Gun. Streisand's Broadway album topped the charts. Sade's Promise topped the charts. Interesting pick. Mr. Mister's album, which had Kyrie Eleison and Broken Wings. Whitney was the top album of the year. Whitney Houston was the top album of the year. It's worth repeating. 5150, first Van Halen album with Sammy Doofus Hagar. Janet Jackson's Control, don't get me started. Patti LaBelle's Winner in You was a big album. Madonna's True Blue. And Dancing on the Ceiling from Lionel Richie. Just like a 1-2 punch of those albums. Can't Hardly Wait, I think, was it? I don't remember. Damn it. And then Dancing on the Ceiling, Say You, Say Me, the title track, Ballerina Girl, some big hits. It was the year after We Are the World had done, which he co-wrote, or mostly wrote, frankly. Huey Lewis's album 4, F-O-R-E, which had Stuck With You and Hip to Be Square. Bon Jovi's Slippery When Wet. So it was like kind of the big, first big, big, big one for them. You Give Love a Bad Name, Living on a Prayer, Wanted Dead or Alive. Boston's Third Stage, it was their last gasp, frankly, even though they would put stuff out after. Amanda was on there, a big hit for them. Springsteen, his collection Live, 1975 to 85, was one of the top albums of the year. And that was sort of like a echo of Born in the USA. They wanted more from Springsteen, and they got it in the Live. Some debut albums, 86. This is pretty, there's some pretty seminal ones here. Michelle Shocked, Concrete Blonde, Throwing Muses, Fishbone, come on, Flaming Lips, Screaming Trees, Yo La Tengo, Smithereens, one of my favorites, The Communards, who did a great cover of Don't Leave Me This Way, Seek Seek Sputnik, their album Love Missile, I mean their song Love Missile F-111. I mentioned these. These would be like if you go back to part one of the 80s from last week, and I mentioned my disclaimers that I might mention albums that were important to me, though not necessarily seminal in any way. Seek Seek Sputnik and Communards, those are the ones. Those are some of the ones because I was a DJ at the time and some of their songs we would spin. Because it was beyond just dance. It was also kind of like proto-industrial and stuff like that. KMFDM, Pet Shop Boys, Roxette. Solo debut albums. Crowded House, debut album, which had Something So Strong, Don't Dream It's Over. Wow. Chumbawamba's debut album. Nobody would really know them until the 90s. Matthew Sweet's debut album, which apparently after this, the label dropped him, I think, and they did two more albums and then or something. I don't know. And then he did Girlfriend. So, you know, the labels, fickle. They Might Be Giants' debut album in 1986. I have a bag here which features cassettes. You can't see it if you're just listening. Go to youtube.com/@musicisnotagenre. This entire bag is filled with cassettes. It's not all my cassettes, but it's most of them. And most of those were from the 1980s, including a copy of They Might Be Giants' debut album. King Diamond and Poison had Talk Dirty to Me. Cinderella, Tesla, Sepultura. So a lot of metal and a lot of hair metal, although still not the dominant hair metal year. That would come soon. Salt-N-Pepa's album from 1986. What? I didn't know they had been out that long. Push It was on there. Cool Moe Dee, Beastie Boys' License to Ill. Keep that in mind for the following year, but they came out in 86. Two Live Crew started in 86. Dougie Fresh, come on. Stetsasonic, God. Bobby Brown's debut album. Babyface, New Kids on the Block. So boy bands were going strong after New Edition. Georgia Satellites, Jayhawks, Bruce Hornsby had the songs The Way It Is and Mandolin Rain. I actually have that album somewhere back there. Dwight Yoakam and Steve Earle and Lyle Lovin and Randy Travis. A lot of great country artists debuted this year. Sam Kinison's debut stand-up album. Cassandra Wilson and Joe Satriani. Some great jazz this year. Fish debuted this year. Again, sorry, just took a nap for a sec. Notables, not debuts, but notables. Run DMC's Raising Hell. It's a third great album. Dear God. Paul Simon's Graceland, just huge and iconic. The Smiths' Queen is Dead. Husker Du, another great album. They just kept putting out great albums in the 80s. Agent Orange, This is the Voice. Not their first album, but my favorite album of theirs. And I believe that's the featured song for this. Yeah, it's the featured song. By the way, at the end is a cover of a song from Agent Orange's This is the Voice. You'll get to hear it. Femmes, The Blind Leading the Naked. It's behind me. That's their third album. Violent Femmes 3 is their fourth album. This is their third album. Amazing album. And I think their first three albums, honestly, their first five albums, if you want to say, are just amazing. Master of Puppets, Metallica, was 86. Peter Gabriel's So, huge, gigantic. Nobody thought that Peter Gabriel would come to that heights by that point. R.E.M.'s Life's Rich Pageant, they still weren't at their height yet, but man, what a great album. Princess Parade, one of my all-time favorite albums of anybody ever. The Bangles, it had Manic Monday and Walk Like an Egyptian. Genesis, Invisible Touch, so they, boom, they had already arrived a decade before or more, and then it started to climb up in this decade, and now they were at the top, you know. Depeche Mode, Black Celebration, Cyndi Lauper's True Colors, Cameo, Word Up, excellent song. Megadeth and Europe, and Bob Seger all had big albums this year, notable. Peter Cetera's notable album, which had Glory of Love and The Next Time I Fall in Love. Billy Ocean had a great album. It was a big year for the Moody Blues. Your Wildest Dreams was a big hit for them. Wang Chung, Everybody Have Fun. So a big album for them. And PIL's album called Album. Absolutely great. It had the song May the Road Rise With You. It was such a great album.
Hello, Pantheon podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has three pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out. Because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once, new quick charge function, three customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode, available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
And that brings us to 1987, which is the second pivot point of the 80s. It is starting to be, to me, what people, when they think of the 80s, this is what they think of, if they are cliche. If you know the 80s, you know it's more than that. That's true for any decade. For some reason, the 80s get fetishized, I think more so than other decades. Although we've seen it happen for the 70s and 90s now, and certainly the 60s. So, you know, that's a whole story right there. But to me, this 87 is when the 80s kind of went from fun to serious. Like in a sense of taking themselves too seriously, slightly overbaked maybe, maybe even faux serious. There were a lot of repeats in 87, which was a combination of holding on to the 80s, I mean, what would come before, and actually that's all it was. I'm misreading my note here, which I'm doing a lot today. Enjoy the magic. I don't edit. Combo, this year was a combo of holding on to the 80s, 87. That's why I felt a little overbaked, a little tight. But also some future 90s successes popping up, especially college rock. That would show a huge presence this year. But also this year, 87, a lot of acts that hit big but wouldn't survive the change of decade. And we'll get to that later on. Fairly good mix overall, though, honestly. Some absolutely huge albums in 87, similar to 84, you know, which, again, I think 83, I said, was a pivot point, and 84 was a huge year. You know, 87, as huge as 84 in many ways. Some top albums of the year, Springsteen Live. Top album of the year, period, was Slippery When Wet, Bon Jovi. As I mentioned, in 86, it came out. License to Ill was number one for quite a while this year. U2's Joshua Tree right behind me. Huge. This is when everyone was like, oh, U2 is going to be a big thing now. Whitney's second album, which was as dominant as the first, it was number one. La Bamba and Dirty Dancing soundtracks. The first one with a lot of Los Lobos. Excellent. Michael Jackson's Bad came out this year and was, of course, number one. And Bruce Springsteen's Tunnel of Love, a great follow-up to Born in the USA 3 years later, 1987. Some debuts. George Michael's Faith. I've done an episode on that. That would be even huger in 88. Keep it in mind. Guns N' Roses debut. Terrence Trent D'Arby. Absolutely huge album. Wishing Well, Sign Your Name. Some great hits. Stacey Q, which had Two of Hearts and We Connect. I have those 12 inches because I was a DJ. Joyce Sims. Her album had All in All and Lifetime Love. Again, great for DJs and just great for dance and R&B music. Jody Watley and Shanice. Exposé. Debut album with Point of No Return and Seasons Change. Nocera. You don't know Nocera. Nobody knows Nocera. Great song. Take me to the warmth of summertime, summertime. Great for dancing. Nitzareb. PWEI, Pop Will Eat Itself, almost put it on the diorama, couldn't fit it. They didn't have a lot of lasting success, but they influenced a lot of other genres later on with that kind of mix of rock and industrial. Tapao, Swing Out Sister, and Rick Astley. This Year Was Never Going to Give You Up and Together Forever. Debbie Gibson's debut album, which had Only in My Dreams, Foolish Beat. To me, she is the proto Taylor Swift mixed with Carly Rae Jepsen. So, you know, they weren't the first to get there. Tiffany also released her album in 87, I Think We're Alone Now. And she, to me, is the proto Britney Spears. Enya, Sinead O'Connor. Debut albums in 87, Keith Sweat, Boogie Down Productions, which was real forward-looking production-wise hip-hop. Real forward-looking. Biz Markie and Ice-T and Eric B and Rakim and Heavy D and the Boys, who had a hit with Mr. Big Stuff. DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince, first album in 87. Girls Ain't Nothing But Trouble. What a healthy slap in the face that song was, pun intended. Public Enemy's first album in 87, Guided by Voices, The Melvins, Goo Goo Dolls, Jane's Addiction, Lemonheads, Blake Babies, The Bodines, The Proclaimers, World Party, and Happy Mondays, so Whispers of the Brit Rock to come. All of this was Whispers of the Indie Rock that would really dominate in the next decade. Henry Rollins' debut before Rollins' band was formed. Napalm Death, Primal Scream, White Zombie, Faster Pussycat, Testament. So some great metal and hard stuff. KT Osland, Patti Loveless, Mary Chapin Carpenter, Indigo Girls. We're talking some dominant female artists. Richard Marx, this album had Don't Mean Nothing, Hold On to the Night. Pizzicato 5, great Japanese band that just kept coming up in the decade to follow. John Patitucci, a great jazz bass player. Michael Brecker, jazz saxophonist. So jazz was going super strong in 87. Some notable albums of 87. Prince's Sign of the Times. Please, I almost put that on the diorama. REM's Document, please. This was such a dominant year. INXS, Kick, The Cure's Kiss Me, Kiss Me, Kiss Me, which is behind me. The Smiths' Strange Ways, Here We Come, which I didn't put on the diorama, but I have. Def Leppard's Hysteria, which had Pour Some Sugar and Armageddon It. Aerosmith's Permanent Vacation, which had Ragdoll, Dude Looks Like a Lady and Angel. Come on, dominant year for music, even if they weren't on the charts. Midnight Oil's Diesel and Dust, which had Beds Are Burning. Whitesnake, Here I Go Again and Is This Love. LL Cool J's Bigger and Deafer, I'm Bad, I Need Love. George Harrison's Cloud 9, absolute classic, huge comeback. Gloria Estefan, huge album with Rhythm, Rhythm Is Gonna Get You in 1, 2, 3, 4, come on, baby, say you love me. Suzanne Vega's album had Luca and Tom's Diner, A Very Special Christmas, the charity album. One of the great pop rock Christmas albums ever. Had Christmas in Hollis, Run DMC. U2's Christmas Baby Please Come Home, my favorite version of that song. Brian Adams' Run Rudolph Run. Alison Moyet's Coventry Carol. Pointer Sisters' Santa Claus Is Coming to Town. Eurythmics' Winter Wonderland. And so many more great songs. Cool Moe Dee, How You Like Me Now. Sting, Nothing Like the Sun. If it could have been better than the first album, it was. 1-2 Punch. I love his first few albums solo. Depeche Mode Music for the Masses, which had Strange Love, Never Let Me Down Again. Pet Shop Boys Going Strong. 10,000 Maniacs in My Tribe. Breakthrough for them. Replacements, Pleased to Meet Me. Hi, Replacements. Yeah. Red Hot Chili Peppers were continuing their climb. Lisa was really strong. That's when she had the Heart and Soul hit. Carly Simon coming around again. Huge, huge, huge for her. I guess you could call it a comeback. And Yes's Big Generator. To me, pretty much as good as 90125. Underrated. Hey, so I was going to do the usual and just list all of the links that I'd love for you to check out, but I realized that everything you need to know and everywhere you need to go is at nickdimatteo.com. That really is the hub. I list all the links in every episode just in case, but nickdimatteo.com is where I put everything that I do. If you want to know more about this podcast, whether it's the audio version or the YouTube version at youtube.com/@musicisnotagenre or wherever else the podcast shows up, or if you want to support the podcast at patreon.com/musicisnotagenre, just go to nickdimatteo.com. It's all there. If you want to check out my full discography of original music and covers for my band Rec, REC, and beyond, it's at nickdimatteo.com, including all the streaming and social links for wherever you listen to music and wherever you check out your soch. My acting clips are there. My voiceover clips are there. Graphic design, my blog, and most especially, it's the best place to contact me. If you go to nickdimatteo.com/contact or just hit the contact is on every single page, you can send me a note, say hello, ask me any questions you'd like. You get a newsletter a few times a month, and if you have a project of your own and need work done for it, whether it's audio editing or music or voiceover or graphic design, or if you have an event and you need live music, go to nickdimatteo.com, contact me, say hello, let me know what you need. I'd love to hear from you. Thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show. 1988, we're almost at the decade's end. Almost as mishy-mashy as the previous, as 86, and even more so, almost as mishy-mashy as in the mid-1970s. There were some big hits and holdovers, and the pop world was kind of riding the cliche 80s here. Hair metal, pretty much at the top, maybe, in 88. As far as underground, most of the strides were happening in hip-hop, electronic, metal, and female singer-songwriters. A lot of huge stuff in 88 for that. Top albums. George Michael's Faith ruled in 88, came out in 87, and dominated in 88. And he would continue to dominate for years. Dirty Dancing soundtrack. Tiffany, OU812 from Van Doofus Halen. Hysteria, Def Leppard was a number one album. So was Guns N' Roses, Appetite for Destruction. Bon Jovi's New Jersey, which had Bad Medicine, I'll Be There for You. Steve Winwood's Roll With It, which was huge for him and for the world. U2's Rattle and Hum was a number one album. Anita Baker. And U2's Rattle On was kind of like Tunnel of Love, where people were looking for more U2, and they got it, and they would get even more in the next decade. Anita Baker, but Giving You the Best That I Got, was also a number one album. But Faith was the number one album of the year. Debuts, Paula Abdul. It's probably the biggest debut of the year. Kylie Minogue, who just had a great hit with Padam Padam. So she's been around for almost 40 years. Taylor Dane, Tell It to My Heart. Millie Vanilli, not really. And that does rhyme, but you'll see why when I get to 89. Pretty Poison, which was from Philly area. Catch Me, I'm Falling, great song, dance rock song. I'll Be Sure, Tony, debut albums. Take Six, which to me was sort of the start of the modern vocal group. Not boy band, but vocal group. Kind of like you'd have like Boys to Men or even Pentatonix. Melissa Etheridge, Sarah McLachlan, Tracy Chapman, Katie Lang's solo album, Tori Amos, Edie Brickell, which was huge. So many great female singer-songwriters. And then you had L7, the Riot Girl, the beginning of Riot Girl to me. The Posies, the Pixies, Morrissey's solo album, debut. Buffalo Tom, Widespread Panic, Afghan Whigs was in 88. Sugar Cubes with Bjork was 88's debut. No FX and My Bloody Valentine. Thought I mentioned them. That might have been an EP prior. Soundgarden debut, Living Color debut, Shabba Ranks, Sir Mix-a-Lot, Rob Bass, and DJ Easy Rock, It Takes Two to Make a Thing Go Right, Kid and Play, Jungle Brothers, Ultramagnetic MCs, which was the new wave of hip-hop production with funk samples ruling the day there. And I'm going to do a full episode, by the way, on just production of hip-hop, just hip-hop, the development of hip-hop production from the beginning until now. That's going to be an episode this year. Slick Rick, Ghetto Boys, N.W.A., EPMD, Big Daddy Kane. Oh, man, what a year for hip-hop. Danzig, Gwar, Kingdom Come, L.A. Guns, Winger, Brittany Fox, which are glam hair metal come lately, as I say. So big year for metal. Thrill Kill Cult, Bomb the Bass, Information Society, which had the song Running So Hard to Find You, Will to Power, Tell Me That I'm Dreaming, 808 State. So we're seeing DJ and industrial production starting to really bubble up in 88. And the Traveling Wilburys' first album, first of two albums in 88. Some notables, Sonic Youth, Daydream Nation, Jane's Addiction, Nothing Shocking, R.E.M. Green, strong album from Poison, Cinderella, Iron Maiden, and Slayer. Metallica's Injustice for All, a huge classic. Queensryche had a great album this year. Susie's Peep Show, Susie and the Banshees Peep Show is a great album. Maybe their best, frankly, after having been around for over a decade. Michelle Schacht had a great album. Prince's Love Sexy was 88. Bobby Brown, Don't Be Cruel, huge. Beav Newger, I think, the following year. The last big album from New Edition was in 88. New Kids on the Block would score big. Their first album didn't really score. This one had Hanging Tough. It was Hanging Tough. A huge one from Fresh Prince, which had Parents Don't Understand. It would go on to win the first ever hip-hop Grammy as a song following year. Another amazing Public Enemy album, Salt-N-Pepa, Lita Ford, Roxette, Erasure had Chains of Love and A Little Respect on that album. Cheap Trick and the Pogues score big. They Might Be Giants, Lincoln is an amazing second album. Not as good as Flood, but close. The Proclaimers, that album had 500 Miles. You know that song. 1989, the final year of the decade, which to me was a much better year for music than might be remembered. You would think the decade was getting old. It had already been kind of warmed over in 87 and 88. But no, it was actually a really good year for pop and a pretty dang eclectic mix. Metal, R&B, hip-hop, electropop. Now, all of that was up there. The biggest representation, frankly, was electropop. It was schmaltzy, yeah. And unlike 1979, there's actually no indication of how much the 90s would change in rock. So I stand by my assertion that the changeover from the 70s to the 80s was the most drastic, was the quickest, I guess. And I think the changeover from the 80s to the 90s may have been the most surprising. Let's put it that way. But there's a lot in R&B and dance and hip-hop, and underground was exploding. So some top albums of 89. Anita Baker was number one album, came out the following year. Guns N' Roses, previous year. Holdovers. Motley Crue had a number one album. The top album of the year was Bobby Brown's Don't Be Cruel, the top album of 1989, and worthy, I think. Debbie Gibson topped with her debut album. Tone Loc, Wild Thing of Funky Cold Medina, that was the number one album. Like a Prayer from Madonna. Fine Young Cannibals had a number one album. Milli Vanilli as well. New Kids on the Block. Paula Abdul's album was number one. Janet Jackson. Prince's Batman. Richard Marx and Phil Collins had number one albums. And Billy Joel's Stormfront, an amazing freaking album. That's a pretty eclectic mix of number one albums. And certainly a lot more than five or six, like in the middle of the decade. Some debuts this year. Third Bass, great. Multiracial, multi-ethnic hip-hop band, Third Bass. Look them up. Bass is spelled B-A-S-E. No, or is it B-A-S-S? I don't know, whatever. Naughty by Nature's debut. Gangstar, Kwame, De La Soul, Queen Latifah in 89. Come on. Young MC with Busta Move, Vanilla Ice. Yeah. Soul to Soul with Keep On Moving and Back to Life. Debuted in 89. Technotronic with Pump Up the Jam in 89. Rex in Effect, Nice and Smooth, Stereo MCs. Stone Roses, Nena Cherry with Buffalo Stance, Lisa Stansfield, I've been around the world and I can't find my baby. Lenny Kravitz's debut album in 1989, Let Love Rule. Tom Petty's Full Moon Fever, his debut solo album, amazing. Garth Brooks' debut album in 89, as well as Clint Black. Big Head Todd and the Monsters, Toad the Wet Sprocket, Tragically Hip, Urge Overkill, Bad English, Gin Blossoms, Jesus Jones, a lot of those kind of indie bands. Rex music. My music is often compared to Jesus Jones, so go look them up. Mudhoney, Nirvana's Bleach debut, The Offspring, Bob Mould from Husker Du's solo album, Tin Machine, the David Bowie's band solo debut album, Warrant debut, Enough is Enough, Extreme, you know, More Than Words debut album, Skid Row, more hair metal, Dream Theater, early prog metal, Fish. I thought I mentioned Fish before. Boy, I got to check my notes. Selena, Nine Inch Nails' Pretty Hate Machine came out this year. First album, Meat Beat Manifesto, and Andrew Dice Clay's stand-up album this year. Notable, Beastie Boys' Paul's Boutique. LL, a huge album with Going Back to Cali, Big Old Button, Jingling Baby, Go Ahead Baby. Cure's Disintegration, which almost put up there, but I didn't. Bonnie Raitt's Nick of Time in 89. Aerosmith's Pump. Real big comeback, I think. Janie Got a Gum, Love in an Elevator. Lou Reed's New York. I love that album. Faith No More. Epic. Michael Bolton with How Am I Supposed to Live Without You. B-52's Cosmic Thing with had Love Shack in Rome. Gigantic album in 89. Chris Isaak with the song Wicked Game. Cher, If I Could Turn Back Time. And After All with Peter Cetera. Tesla. Indigo Girls, which had Closer to Fine, McCartney's Flowers in the Dirt, Elvis Costello's Spike. They worked together on those albums in some ways. Another great Soundgarden, another great Red Hot Chili Peppers. Both of them were rising. Tears for Fears, which had Sowing the Seeds of Love, Bangles with Eternal Flame and In Your Room. Another great 10,000 Maniacs, Ecstasy's Oranges and Lemons, and The Smithereens. What a great way to end the decade. Speaking for itself as the 80s, but also looking ahead and showing how eclectic that the 80s didn't necessarily rule for eclectic music, but it showed that the kind of way that eclectic music would hit the charts really started to me in the 80s. Anyone who knows music in the 80s in particular could tell you how different the second half of production of the 80s was from the first half. And these are conclusions, by the way, if I didn't tell you. And while that was true in every decade to an extent, you can hear the difference in production in late and early 70s. It was none more so than the 80s, even more than the 90s, and certainly anything after that, and certainly even the 60s. I think production changed drastically in the halves of the decade in the 80s. Because it was so tech-driven in the second half that the actual quality of sound and recording changed a lot. And like I said in the intro, the industry caught on to underground trends. It's what they always do. They do it every decade, every other year, frankly, and we'll see it again in the 90s. It's also why we need a refresher every decade or so, because the industry overbakes everything. We need a changing of the guard. The industry tends to overplay its hand. It makes trends weaker and weaker, echoes of each other. It's like grunge light in the late 90s, whatever. It's like how glam in the 1970s and then turned into like early 80s kind of flashy metal became hair metal or glam metal in the mid to late 80s and became overbaked, and how electronic from the 70s and early 80s became kind of slick pop in the late 80s. It was that sense of a lot of great stuff actually came out from that and great songs, and you might love all of that, but you could see how it was kind of getting overbaked, you know. It's why, to me, the balance of good and bad in indie and pop was about equal in the first half. You had some amazing pop, you know, and then to me it shifted. Well, no, I would say that's the same for all decades. Despite my notes here, who is this guy Nick writing these notes? I think it was equal throughout the decade, but just balanced differently in terms of the public, as far as the quality of music in indie and pop, pretty equal, you know. It's just different emphasis, you know, in each part of the decade. So really, though, pop versus indie, indie versus pop, there's no clear winner. I mean, by definition, monetarily, pop always wins. But in terms of music, even in terms of music, I don't think there's a clear winner. The 80s were huge for quality pop. Now, that's true for a lot. But this book I read that told me that pop music as its separate genre didn't really exist until kind of the 80s. I mean, a little bit in the 70s. But when you think of now, pop is a distinct genre. We take it for granted. That wasn't the case in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Anything popular was pop, but it wasn't a separate genre. 80s defined it to me. Let's not also forget, though, racism and the slow adoption of hip hop and house and other ethnic and sexually minority driven genres. In part, it was the shaking off the stink of disco, but that was also racist and genderist and all of that stuff. So it took the decade a while to catch up. But it was a very diverse mix of music throughout the decade, especially in the mid and later part of it, as far as the charts go. But the 80s had a larger share of those artists taking control of their own careers, such as Prince and Tina Turner. Even though that happened in the 70s and started in earnest in the 60s with Motown and all of that, and blew up in the 90s with Prince's protests and everything and George Michael's lawsuit, it really was the 80s when these were becoming much more vocal in terms of we need to control our contracts and our music rights and all that. Super key conclusion. I think one of my favorite conclusions of any episode ever of Music is Not a Genre. Here's your question. What element of music exists now in 2024 that didn't exist in the 1980s? I'm not talking genres, but certainly not artists or even production values, but what element of music sonically exists now that did not exist in the 80s? I'm going to say zero. By the 1980s, every element that we have now sonically, again, not about how music is produced, how it ends up sounding when it's all put together, but in terms of the elements of music, everything that exists now had by the 80s come to exist. I think that's a huge conclusion, and I would love your feedback on that. You know, sure, formats changed and albums got longer and songs, you know, blah, 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 and things fell out of favor and then came back, like how the keyboard was anathema in a lot of rock in the early 90s and would come back in the late 90s and big, big, big in the 2000s. You know, new technologies changed how we make music and how much music there is and how it is disseminated, in particular in the 1980s, because even though you had the advent of vinyl in the 50s, especially in 60s, and cassettes, which bonus episode from last week, and other technological changes and that nascent like synths in the 60s and 70s, it's when the 80s, when these things became affordable and widely disseminated, that they went everywhere, and it changed how music was produced and recorded and all that, especially early computer technology recording happened in the 80s as well. I mean, a little bit 70s, but mostly in the 80s and then hugely 90s and beyond. But again, I dare you to name one element of music that's around today and that wasn't around in the 80s, by the 80s. So featured song. I'm not sure if this is my favorite music decade. That's hard. If not, it's probably a close second. But either way, it is, I can't deny it, it's the most influential decade for my music because it's when I kind of came of age, even though the 90s probably about equal as far as influence. And, you know, it's the one decade where I codified most of how I approach music. Again, the 90s and 2000s, I would add more to it. But the way I approach music started out, as far as I'm concerned, in the 80s. So my featured song is a cover that my band Wreck did of an Agent Orange song, as I mentioned, that from that album, This Is The Voice, called In Your Dreams Tonight. Now, that's around the middle of the decade. It's a song that was an offshoot of what was going on earlier in the decade, the post-punk movement, from the middle of the decade. And I produced it as it would have been produced later in the decade from industrial people like Nine Inch Nails, early 90s, something like that. So think of post-punk mixed with middle decade 80s mixed with industrial. And that's the cover that you're going to hear in just a minute or two. And by the way, yes, bonus episode, the M Extra video for this episode 20 is on CDs. The history of CDs goes back so far, you wouldn't believe it. You get to hear about all the numbers and how CDs changed the world of music and then died. At patreon.com/musicisnotagenre. So some questions for you to end this episode. As always, how do you feel about the second half of the 80s as compared to the first half? Do you prefer it? Or do you like the early 80s better? Does it sound more 80s to you, the late 80s stuff? When you think 80s and you hear a song from the mid to late 80s, does it sound more 80s to you than the early 80s? Can you hear how the divide between the super popular and indie music, which was happening throughout the decade, and not contentiously really much, but it was setting up a major shift that would happen in the next decade? Can you hear that? I'd love to know your answers to this and every question, because as always, my objectives here are music, conversation, and connection. Thank you for listening and watching, and I will talk to you next week.
Disappoint me in so many different ways. Close your eyes, drift off to sleep. The song I sing is yours to keep. Think of me, you'll be all right. We'll be together in your dreams tonight. Tonight. Love belongs to no one. No one seems to care. I'm convinced that I could change your mind if I was there. Don't be sad, it's not so bad. Just use your weary mind to add some color to these lives, all black and white. In your dreams tonight, intensify, feel the sound aside, in living color, in your dreams tonight.
Alexa, you know who. This is the voice, this is the voice, this is the voice of you know who. This is the voice, this is the voice, this is the voice of you know who.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.